Chairman Hank and Chairman Hobbins, members of the committee. My name is Chuck Degatti. I represent my company, which is called Neptune Wind. I'm from Massachusetts, but I spent a fair amount of time in Maine participating in the Ocean Energy Task Force last fall, working with a number of people that Beth Nagusky introduced me to around this room and elsewhere. And I've gotten up to speed relatively quickly about the issues and the culture and the dynamics in the Maine energy issue, industry, as well as the environmental issues. I have been spending a lot of time researching potential sites for development in Maine, both near shore and in deeper water, and my interests initially are in near shore, shallower water development. What I'd like to do is just spend a few minutes talking about some of the great things that are in the Ocean Energy Task Force recommendations that are now in this bill. I'm going to talk about a couple of things I'd like to see some work. First of all, it's an excellent effort by the OETF and many others. The strengths are the goal. I think 5-gigawatt goal is admirable. It's clearly a demonstration of a leadership opportunity for the state, and consistent with the other goals of other states in New England to make the region, which I think is it really should be viewed as a regional exercise because you are part of a grid and you're not isolated in Maine. I think the submerged lands leasing mechanism is the best I've seen anywhere in the country in terms of the processes by which I as a developer and we as developers, whether you're near shore, offshore, deep water, doesn't matter, can obtain a lease to the land and still meet your development goals and milestones. The permitting has been clarified but not yet streamlined. I'm hoping that it will be more streamlined over time, but I think the clarification is excellent. The language in there for transmission support is a bonus and surprising to developers because most developers think they have to pay for their own extension cord to the land. And there's talk in the bill about that actually being amortized over the rate base. That would be wonderful. And there's also talk in the bill about port development, and that's critical. You cannot do this without some public-private investment in enhancing the ports for fabrication, lay down, construction, bringing material in and out, et cetera. So those are all the good things. The areas that need work, and I'm going to take you through some numbers, and perhaps the first time you've seen some numbers from a developer, as you pointed out, Representative Fletcher. And my numbers are only my numbers. There's another developer who's got a different set of numbers, but I bet we're not that far apart. The areas that need more work are in helping developers to finance these projects. And the phrase that's used in the state of Maine is a moral obligation credit enhancement program. And if that means that there could be some percentage of the debt that is layered on these project finance packages, could in fact be guaranteed by the state. That has a massive impact on the overall cost and therefore corresponding required price for the power that's generated. And I'll show you that mathematically. And the second area that needs more work is the big issue of the day, which is who's going to pay for the power? You cannot finance these projects without a long-term power purchase agreement. I think everyone here understands that. Not everyone likes that. But you need to have at least 15, preferably 20 years. You're going to have 15 to 20 years of debt that you have to pay back. You cannot go put together a financing package unless there's a guaranteed offtake. The notion of a spot market sale just doesn't work in our economy. So we have to talk about that. The issue there is that the state is not stepping up yet in terms of an RFP for a long-term offtake contract. There's talk about kicking it down the field to the next administration staff a year from now, and I think that's waiting too long. My understanding is that this is an emergency bill. You're scrambling to digest it and to discuss it and to work on it in the next couple, 3 weeks. And I think part of the emergency issue that needs to be considered, all respectfully, is whether we want to get something started this year or we want to wait another couple of years. And so you can have it whichever way you'd like. If you go to the slides that I handed out, there's a blue package here. I did a simple analysis of the economic impact of a 250-megawatt offshore wind project. And I thought that would be very illuminating. Initially, this project might cost $1.5 billion, everything in. Of that, we'd probably spend around $400 million in Maine, on Maine people and Maine services and goods produced in Maine. A simple multiplier effect might make that be $500 or $600 million. So that's for fabrication, ship leasing, construction. And it doesn't even include the idea of building a shipbuilding facility or updating Maine's shipbuilding capacity in Bath Iron Works and elsewhere. So that's an interesting number, and that's over a couple of years of construction once a project has been fully permitted. But the even more interesting number is 25 years of commissioning, or 30 years of commissioning. So once an offshore wind project of this size is in operation, it requires operations support, maintenance services. It will be making lease payments to the state for use of the public trust, the submerged lands, as it should. It will have people for project management and a host of other things. May even buy insurance from your wonderful insurance industry here in Maine. That costs about $40 million a year for this size project. Of that, I've identified roughly $28 million is to be spent locally in the state of Maine. Now, that's all people. The multiplier on that could be as high as 4 or 5 in terms of the impact on the economy as the dollars go around. So it could be over $100 million a year for 25 or 30 years. And that's for one tiny 250 megawatt project. So just keep that in mind. You go to the next slide, and we're going to talk about, well, what does this do for the power pricing? What's required in order for a developer and his or her backers to actually step foot in the state of Maine and to ask for that permit from your officials? So there's an analysis here of no support from the state for debt and some support. Let's just go down the no support analysis, the left-hand middle column. We assume a 7% interest rate paid over 15 years. We assume a 250 megawatt nameplate capacity for our offshore wind project, which is roughly 50 turbines at 5 megawatts capacity apiece. We are assuming, based on our analysis and cost estimates, of about $6.2 million per megawatt, or a little over $6 a watt. It's expensive, which equates to the billion and a half dollars required to build this project. All right. In order to pay for that and have adequate return for the financiers, the equity sponsors, the tax equity, and the debt, we require 22 cents per kilowatt hour price at wholesale. So today, the main wholesale is around 8 cents. This is just for energy, not transmission or distribution. So the premium is 14 cents. That's very, very high. So the annual value of that premium is $150 million a year. Over the 25 years from just this one project. Well, the good news is that that's only 1.3 cents per kilowatt hour for every ratepayer. That doesn't sound like much. The even better news is that 37% of your retail electricity consumption is in the home. So for the average household, that would be $8 a month. You can determine whether that's a big number or a little number, $8 a month. Put on the second column, well, what if there were some support? And maybe it's a combination of Maine state support and federal government support in terms of financing, which is what truly has to happen to make these projects work. And there are those who don't think subsidies are appropriate, but the only way we move in this direction is through some level of support and subsidy, at least in the next decade or two, until the technologies have changed and improved and matured. But let's assume a 4.5% interest rate over 20 years. And the bottom line is only a $5 a month bill increment to the average Maine household. So what I'd like to do is just conclude by making a couple of recommendations which at the surface appear quite audacious, but I think might help set the stage for your workshop and for your thinking about what is the point of all this. I mean, to me, the point of all this is how do you encourage half a dozen developers to come into the state of Maine? They're either local people or nearby people, and spend several billions of dollars in your economy constructing boats, constructing sites, hiring thousands of employees, and then spending hundreds of millions of dollars over 30, 40, 50 years of operations. What does it take to do that? And furthermore, what does it take to be the leading state in New England, if not all of America, to do that, given your incredible resource of offshore wind? So I propose the following. The proposal would be step up and think about an RFP, directing the PUC to work with the utilities to purchase 1.25 gigawatts of offshore energy, wind plus the other categories, by 2020. So over the next decade. Because we'll never get to 5 gigawatts by 2030 if you don't do at least a gigawatt this decade. And what that means in practice is that we have to have some nearshore coastal water development over the next 4 to 5 years as the permitting process takes place, followed by more and more deep water projects as those technologies mature. But those technologies are still 5 years plus away. So 1.25 megawatt RFPs, maybe a sequence of those over the next decade. That would drive $7.8 billion of construction spending in Maine, $3 billion of which would be in this Maine economy. It would drive $600 million a year in the economy for operations for 30 or 40 years, the useful life of these generation plants. In order to make this really work, it would be essential that the state consider helping to support the financing. So $2.3 billion in project debt, or 50% of the total, again, over 10 years to be financed or supported as a state guarantee, if that's possible. And so what does this do? Well, in addition to the economic impact on the economy's GDP and all the jobs that would create, it would also reduce 3.3 million tons of carbon a year. So carbon offset is dramatic for this 1.25 gigawatt build out over the next decade. So in this analysis, I've excluded any spending on electric vehicle, electric heating, retrofits, et cetera. I mean, capital expenditures on that, the installation costs, et cetera, most of that are going to be private industry. There will be some public support, I assume. But at the end of the day, that also has a multiplier effect on the economy. That probably won't happen without this offshore wind project, this proposal. The two do go hand in hand. I actually agree with other industry members that suggest there's no point in doing electric vehicle and electric heating conversion unless we have a policy directive at your level, at the state level, to build a 5-gigawatt offshore wind industry. If that goal is not present, then why bother? Then there's plenty of other things you can do to reduce the reliance on foreign oils and fossil fuels. Thank you very much. Are there any questions?
Thank you, Mr. Pagani. I think we have a question here from Representative Fletcher.